Where'd you go?
I don't know. This happened the last time when we hung up and started a new call. It keeps saying I need to update Skype, blah blah blah, because of whatever. So, but we're all back on now. So, right? Is Andy in?
Hey, there we go.
Okay.
All
right.
All right. Now we got all three of us.
Okay.
Let me just make sure my recorder is recording now because we jumped from one call to another.
Okay. Mine's recording as well.
Says recording on, so we should be good. And let's try and jump right into things then.
Okay.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Listen to The Prophets that we keep them flying. I'm Paul
Spataro. Keep flying those prophets.
Listen to them flying prophets.
The prophets are flying.
I'm Paul
Spataro. A space station, find a crew, keep orbiting.
And I'm still Paul Spataro. And I am joined by my two stalwart co-hosts. Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
And Dr. Showless Bill Robinson.
I am security level 6.
I'm only a 4. How does that work?
You got me there. And today we are continuing in our efforts to review and hopefully give some intellectual thoughts on every episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We are currently up to Season 3, Episode 7, Civil Defense. And I can tell already my two co-hosts like this episode. We're not burying the lead. We're going right into it. So we'll get into the episode in a minute. In the meanwhile, any Star Trek news since the last time? Because the last time I was getting ready to go to EternalCon, so I should be giving an EternalCon report, but I still haven't gone yet.
I was just going to ask, was EternalCon good?
I'm sure it was, but I haven't gone yet, even though this episode will be 6 months after I go.
Oh, there'll be another EternalCon by the time this one goes up.
Yeah, well, last year's EternalCon is still being discussed on episodes that were coming up recently, so yeah.
Yeah.
In the meanwhile, I'm going to jump right into the Bible, because we're not going to have any new news anyway. And the next entry is Loaxana Troi, because she's such a real big presence
in
Space Nine. Loaxana is Deanna Troi's mother, established on Star Trek The Next Generation as the anti-mame of the galaxy. When circumstances bring her to the space station, she forms a romantic attachment to Odo and finds reasons to come back to see him. He tries to discourage her, and then it's got the quote, "Ma'am, I turn into a liquid form at night. Loaxana, I can swim." And that's all they give you on her. And that's probably
about as
deep as the character is.
She's attracted to everybody on every show. Whatever.
But actually, the episode that we covered where she came back and stayed with Odo when he did have to turn to his liquid form, that's the first time, to my knowledge, that they gave her character any depth and any reason to actually like her.
See, now, I thought she did well as Loaxana, even though, again, she fell for someone. In the episode that had the guy from MASH played a character
David
named
David Steers, the half
a life. Yeah, the character's name I think was Timon, and basically once they reached the age of 60, they basically just did they killed themselves. it was like euthanasia, but there was nothing wrong with him. They're just like, well, I've reached age 60, my life is done.
It was kind of Logan's run at 60.
Right, right, yes, exactly. And she was rebelling against that. It was a very, I thought that was one of the, that was a good episode of Next Gen.
You're actually right. And when I made that statement just now that this was the first one that gave us some depth, I had forgotten that one. So I rescind my statement. I've been proven wrong.
Mark the tape, Andy. We got it.
You know what?
You want to cut that clip out, don't you?
Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Is that some type of dig at me?
I don't know. You can read into it as you please.
Do I look like a clock to you?
Even
do
a blind squirrel occasionally finds an acorn.
I like squirrels.
Squirrel. No, there was the stretch where you were dug from up.
I'm always dug from up. I don't know what you're talking about.
Anybody have any more comments on Loxana before we move on right into the episode?
Loxana was one of those characters that was better when she didn't show up.
Yeah. Although, as I said, that last episode with her was pretty good despite her.
Yeah. And it's no disrespect to Majel Barrett. That was the character she was given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be more disrespect to the writers, if anything.
Yeah.
I just had one little thing. I've started, since this is Garrick is in this episode, I've been reading the Stitch in Time book. I'm not going to give any major spoilers away. I'm just because I discussed this a little bit with you, Paul. Basically, I'm about 30 pages into the book. And the format of the book is it takes place after the fall of Cardassia, after everything's gone hokey towards the end of the series with turning, you know, when they turn against the Jemadar and such. And Garrick is back on Cardassia, and he's basically writing his memoirs to Bashir. And it's taking place in current time, and he's basically going back and telling his life story from when he was a child, starting there. So you alternate between present day, past, through the chapters. And so that's kind of the format. And I, like I was saying to you, Paul, that this book is taking me a while to read because a lot of books that I read, I will just do it in like a generic voice in my head as I'm, you know, going through and reading the lines. But what I'm doing when I'm getting to Andy Robinson's dialogue, I'm reading it in my head in a Garrick voice. So it's taking me a little longer because I pause and I read this as Garrick. And so far, I'm enjoying the book. So I will, and like we had looked up last time or found out, this is a hard book to find.
Yes, it is. So somehow along the lines, you know, it's taking you a little while to get through it, and then you're going to get it to me, and it's going to take me a while to get through it. Then I'm going to get it to Andy. It's going to take him a while to get through it. Then we'll do a review on the show, and then Andy will sell it on eBay and make a tremendous profit for himself.
Yay. I like this deal.
Hey, wait a minute.
That's a good deal?
Now, normally... the cost of postage for me to send it from me to Andy would far exceed the value of the book, and it's
not
just like,
time.
Well, just buy it anyway. But in this instance, the book is so expensive to buy that it's going to be worthwhile to pay the postage to send it over.
Well, for a paperback book, what is it? We saw on eBay, it's going for like $42.
Yeah, and I think the postage from here to Andy, if I remember from the last time I did it, is somewhere around $15.
I've just found a copy for £159.
Yeah. Unless I find a digital copy between now and when it comes time to get it to you, I'll bite the bullet and I'll send it to you.
Yeah, a digital copy will be fine.
Yeah, if I find digital, then I don't need to take bills, and Bill can send it on eBay. Sell it.
Maybe you should just scan it page by page.
If you want to do that, I'll be happy to read it that way.
No,
but
no,
I know
because
I don't
want to
do that.
Because then I got to fold over and bend the spine, and I just can't do that.
Why are you bending Ben's spine? Poor Ben.
Because he's Bane.
Yeah.
Bane Robinson.
Ben's Batman.
You want to go? To read this book.
What a
yes,
lovely
daddy.
Voice.
Yes, Daddy, you fight like a young man.
He's going to kick the living crap out of you one day.
I was born a geek. I live in it.
So we're here to do civil defense, which is the seventh episode of season 3.
A Cardassian doomsday device.
Your attempt to seize control of this facility is going to fail.
Triggers a countdown to destruction.
I can't override it.
If you do not regain control, the station will be destroyed.
And the more the crew tries to escape...
We're completely cut off from the rest of the station.
The closer they come to oblivion.
We got about 10 minutes before the main reactor core overloads and destroys the station.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Directed by Reza Badil?
Badia?
Maybe.
I'm not even going to try that.
Written by Michael Krohn. And it originally aired on November 7th, 1994. And you got to love, the guest actors are Andrew J. Robinson as Garrick, Mark Alamo as Dukat, and Danny Goldring as Leggett Kell.
Who?
Whatever. And the plot goes something like this. While converting the station's old ore processing unit into a deuterium, I don't know how to pronounce that, refinery, Chief O'Brien and Jake Sisko accidentally trip an old Cardassian security program, which was set to put the station on lockdown in the event of a Bajoran uprising during the occupation. O'Brien, Jake, and Commander Sisko are trapped in the ore processing unit, an area of the station which was once run using Bajoran slave laborers. Failsafes in that system prevent the rest of the crew from accessing the area or beaming the trapped people out. When Jake crawls up the ore chute and tries to break out, the entire station locks down. An image of Gul Dukat plays on all the monitors, announcing that rioting Bajorans have escaped. Poisonous gas is being released in the ore processing unit. In Ops, Major Kira, Dr. Bashir, and Dax have been locked in to prevent presumed homicidal Bajoran workers from storming the station's control center. Odo is dismayed to find himself locked in his security office with Quark. As the crew works to lift the lockdown program, another failsafe is tripped. The Dukat program on the monitors warns the crew that the whole habitat ring will soon be flooded with poisonous gas. The crew members in Ops are surprised to see Garrick wander in. As a Cardassian, his access codes allow him to travel around the station during the lockdown, which was only meant to contain Bajoran workers, not their Cardassian overlords. I, for one, welcome our new Cardassian overlords. He advises the crew to shut off the life support system, which will prevent the release of the poison gas. Unfortunately, this will also leave them only 12 hours to resolve their situation before the oxygen runs out. He discovers he is wrong about that when the Dukat program announces that the station will self-destruct in 2 hours. When Garrick tries to hack into the computer using Gul Dukat's identity, yet another failsafe locks him out and activates an array of weapons in Ops that shoots random blasts of phaser fire. The crew dives for cover. Suddenly, they receive a visitor. It's the real Gul Dukat, who arrives in Ops, having received notification that the system had been tripped. He teases the hapless crew about their predicament, sauntering safely around Ops, because the phaser fire is programmed to target only non-Cardassians. Even Garrick is safe, although Dukat angrily points out that he would have made an exception if Garrick had been on the station when Dukat designed this program. After deactivating the weapons in Ops, he attempts to use his leverage to get Major Kira to agree to having a Cardassian garrison placed upon the station, but she refuses. When attempting to return to his ship, Dukat's delight is short-lived when a new program pops up onto the monitors. It is Leggett Kell, Dukat's former commanding officer, who has left his recording in case Dukat tried to abandon the station during a worker revolt. Kell's voice angrily informs Dukat that all of his access codes have been eliminated, and that he must now contemplate the depth of his disgrace and try to die like a Cardassian. Now, no one, not even Dukat, will be allowed to leave the area before the self-destruct. In the processing unit, O'Brien and the Siskos have managed to blast their way out by blowing up leftover ore. From Ops, Dax manages to shut down the force fields set up in the station's halls. With 10 minutes left, Sisko makes his way to the computer that controls the station's shielding and fortifies the shields just enough to absorb the energy of the station's self-destruct system, saving the station. The end.
I I think you need to play the Looney Tunes powerhouse music under this whole synopsis. Because it's just one comedy of errors after another.
But it was, you know, it was really entertaining. Especially to me, the scene when Ducat kind of gets his comeuppance. Because he was so smug.
So smug, he's just standing there drinking. Be careful.
But what really sells that, did you see Kira's face?
When he
tries to beam back to the stage, but back to his ship, and it won't beam him back up.
I seem to remember a big grin coming across her face.
She does this really wonderful bit of facial acting where her face says, "You smug bastard." It was a brilliant piece of acting from her, playing off what Mark Alamo was doing, which just goes to that I still think this is the best ensemble of actors that have ever been in a Star Trek television show.
Well, and then when Garak basically calls him out and says, "Oh, will you please stop hitting on Kira? It's not going to work." And the indignation that Mark Alamo tries to feign, like, what? I'm a married man. It's like, oh, please, we can see right through you that you've got a thing for. Just stop it. Oh, it was just great.
Mm-hmm. It's great. I'm a little surprised that this would be a program that hadn't shown itself up until this point. Like, they've been on the station long enough.
Yeah, but they were trying to wipe and delete a bunch of stuff, and you know, the Cardassians or the Kardashians are devious and leave things behind. So, I don't see this as being beyond the realm of possibility.
Well, not that, just a little. I think it strains logic a little bit that in, you know, how many years? What are we? 3 years into this already? That this hasn't, you know, hasn't shown up until this point, and it's a pretty pervasive program. I would think that you would have triggered
it. And especially seeing as the gas jets are still active. You'd have thought they'd have found that potentially lethal weapon.
Well, I mean, we did see that there are parts of the station that they've never been to, because they go into the one room that's got all the ore just laying about.
Or what?
Or
what?
Or. Like, she's in awe. Oh.
I don't even have a response for that one. Okay.
That shut you up.
Move on from our little Abbott and Costello bit. Go ahead.
But anyway, they have all the awe laying about, which apparently you can light with a glow stick.
The ending is a little fast.
That explosion, I expected like this massive explosion. It's like, pop. There's a hole in the door. What? That's it? What happened? And when they climb into the next room, I almost thought it was going to look exactly like the room they just came out of. And they're like, oh my God, we're stuck in another room. But that was just me. But they got out.
No, I... At Blaine Dowler's continued mention throughout his 75 Marvels Grey's Marvels podcast, I've started to listen to Mission Log.
Oh yeah,
And I'm still early on. I'm in first season of TOS.
I'm in second season of Next Gen.
But they he comments, and he's adopted for that show the looking at like morals and meanings in the episodes. That's the one thing about this episode, is I really saw none other than wipe that smug look off your face.
Yeah,
I have found myself influenced by that podcast to the point where I am looking for if there's any deeper meaning in the shows.
I guess the deeper meaning is...
It is there a lot. I think that's one of the nice things about the show, is that it's not always... surface level. But in this one, like I said, I thought the biggest moral I was able to get from it was wipe that smug look off your face.
No, I.
You're one of us now.
The moral is, and much like we can take from Star Wars Episode One, there's always a bigger fish. There's always a higher security access level.
Yes.
I did like the little scene with Quark and Odo stuck in Odo's office, and Odo tells him, which this plays out at the end of the episode. You know, Odo tells him, "Well, you're one of the most devious Ferengi I know," and then towards the end, Quark actually reads his entry. Basically, he says that Odo says he's pretty much a buffoon.
Yeah, but and I love the scene where he's like, "Name one Ferengi more devious than me," and he names like he rattles like, off like 10 of them, and even like, then it's just fading out because you know he's got even more.
He's like, "The Nagus? Okay, well, one that I know, your brother Rom.
One what? On the station."
Yeah, one on the station, your brother. What?
Yeah, I thought that was very well done. That was like, right, that was more Casablanca. Like, that was walking off, this is going to be the, you know, Louis, this is going to be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Mm-hmm.
See, my only problem with that is there was no reason for Quark and Odo to be trapped in the same room together. That was stretching credibility somewhat. That Quark would go, "No, this is the safest place, I'm staying here." And that was it. That felt a little bit forced, that they just wanted those two to be together. But it didn't hamper my enjoyment overall of what is a rollicking good little action episode. And especially remarkable considering they stay on the station.
Hmm.
My only complaint with it really is the middle section forgets about Ben and O'Brien. At no point does it cut back to what they're up to. But by that point, Mark Alamo and Andy Robinson are just so commanding the screen that you don't care.
Mm-hmm. Sisko? Yeah. Who? What?
Yeah. I'd watch the Garrick show. I really would.
Oh, absolutely. And you could just have the Odd Couple music.
Ducat's looking down at him. "Oh, it was worth the trip just to see you groveling, Garrick."
Yeah, very often when you have supporting characters who are engaging like that, you know that it's kind of a byproduct of little doses. And that if you had if all of a sudden they did a spin-off show of them, that it wouldn't hold up as well because the character isn't strong enough and there's not enough depth there to really do it. In this case, that's absolutely not it. If they decided to do some sort of a person of interest show with Garrick and Ducat, it would be awesome.
Yeah, I think everything about those two in this episode is brilliant.
I think the example I can give of the people not strong enough is often in sitcoms. You'll have that one, you know, relatively minor character who commands the screen when they're on it and gets great laughs. But then if you start dedicating whole episodes to them, you start saying, it's losing something. It's not as funny as it was when it was a walk-on, get a good laugh, and then walk off.
There's one nitpick I have, and that is the time frame in which Ducat arrives on the station. How close did he have to be to get there? Because really, this has only been going on for about, not even, a half hour to an hour tops? And he's on the station. "Well, I got a message from myself." And what are you hiding just like behind an asteroid? Just outside of range or something? How did you get here so damn quick? With a garrison of troops on your ship ready to go.
Yeah,
that was the only thing that was kind of like, okay.
That's true, but it hadn't actually even occurred to me until you just said it now. So I agree with you that your point is well taken, but it's either a bad reflection on me that I didn't notice it, or, it's just, all right, whatever.
Yeah, I mean that. I'm still glad he was there. It's a good episode, but I was just kind of like, yeah, he did get there awful quick.
I guess there could have been some sort of throwaway line as to why he was in the area. Maybe they were, heading for the wormhole or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like that everything they did made it worse.
Oh yeah,
that was one of the best things about it.
It's like, I hate to pull from from Star Wars again, but it's like the Han Solo thing when, you know, let's destroy the life support system. That'll give us 12 hours. You have 2 hours until self-destruct. It's not my fault. It's not my fault.
It's locust.
Maybe it's the John Belushi effect. Yeah, because everything is just, you know, a comedy of errors. We'll do this. Oh, crap. And man, yeah, those phaser blasts were lethal. Just completely vaporized one of those one of the Federation guys.
Red shirt.
Whoosh, gone.
We haven't had too many red shirts on the show.
No, but the minute they put a scene on the bridge and it's the main cast and a bunch of people have never seen before, you can pretty much guess one of them's going to die.
Yeah.
You know what I'm noticing? We're 7 episodes into season 3, and I'm just never seeing Morn anymore.
No, we've not seen Morn at all this year, have we?
And we've had episodes on the station like this one. There's no reason that you couldn't have at least him in the background in a scene or something.
Well, that's because he's running bingo over here by my house. Remember the picture I put up? Morn bingo.
I'm a little disappointed with that. He's clearly, he, not only is he a favorite of ours, but I think clearly he was a favorite of the production team because they did work him into so many episodes. I'm surprised they didn't. Yeah, even they could have just created a Morn figure. You know, you didn't even have to have a person in it, and just had it sitting at the bar, and every once in a while, when you just have it there, if there's no reason for him to be doing anything.
Yeah, and it's a very well paced and very action packed. Everything they do makes things worse. So that adds to it. But there's some little touches in it that are brilliant. When Ducat walks into Sisko's office and just hits the baseball off the desk.
You hear the thud.
Boom, yeah.
When it hits. Mm-hmm.
That's a brilliant moment. And I think Mark Alamo owns this episode. Andy Robinson's as good as Andy Robinson ever is. But Mark Alamo's just smug superiority. It's just joyful, especially when they get to the bit where he tries to beam up and he's stuck there like everyone else is. That's the best bit in the episode, that.
I think we need to rethink the Cardassian presence on the station. Oh, I think we should station a garrison.
I'm still a little unclear as to why they totally abandoned the station. And why they didn't have a presence there, even if they felt it wasn't worth their while to maintain it any longer.
Because there was no wormhole at that point, and the war was over.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, good point. Mm. Okay.
Deep Space Nine has only become a place now that the wormhole's arrived.
I'm just thinking about it, though. Like, would it have been wiser for them to destroy it at that point?
Well, they did ruin it, didn't they?
Well, they ruined it like somebody whose house is under foreclosure and they decide, you know, screw the new people, I'm going to pour cement into the toilet bowl.
Mm.
But they didn't totally destroy it.
Yeah, no, it was just like a petty act of destruction before they left. Well, they didn't think it was worth anything. They probably didn't think it was worth the trouble of wasting explosives on it. At the time that they abandoned Terek Noir, the war with the Bajor was over. It was just a useless piece of tin in the middle of nowhere. Why not just go, let Bajor deal with it? Why should we bother? And then the wormholes opened up, and it's a prime piece of space real estate.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to look at it, that they viewed it as actually a nuisance to have to get rid of. And now it's, you know, basically it's our litter, and we're leaving it on your property. You could throw it out.
That's still a big space station to just leave.
You do have to take it from that perspective, that somehow they viewed it as a liability to have to destroy it.
Or maybe the evacuation order came through very quickly. Maybe it was just like, war's over, get the hell out of Dodge. And on the way out, they just took an axe to the place and then went, right, fuck it.
So, like I said, I don't think there's a lot of deeper meaning to this one, though, so it's a little hard to come up with too many topics to discuss on.
No, it is just a really rollicking fun show, and Deep Space Nine needs one of them every now and again, because it's not quite developed its sense of humour amongst the rest of the cast yet. Quark and Odo are always funny. But as we go along now, as Iris Stephen Burr takes full control with season 4, lots of the other characters will start having comedic interludes and people will become a bit more relaxed and it'll start becoming what we remember it. But this was just 45 minutes of a really just exciting bottle show that was really fun. Everything they did made it worse. Everything they did cocked everything else up. There's nothing they can do about it. They just kept piling problem upon problem on them. And then the only problem with that is the ending seemed a little bit rushed. Although, fair credit to Avery Brooks for making pulling little chips out of a set look exciting. Let's give him some acting credit for that.
And then randomly...
The countdown clock didn't stop at 007.
Yeah, that was disappointing as well. But
it actually stopped and he was still going like, oh, and he's hitting all the buttons or just smacking the display. He had to crawl through the corridor of green fire. Wildfire from Game of Thrones. That's what that was, that green fire.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I think that was supposed to be plasma.
So... As I was watching this episode, you know what I started thinking?
What did you think?
Wait. Were you thinking, why are the sleeves so easy to tear off their uniforms?
I hadn't thought of that.
And how do they make such really good gloves?
I know, it's like, did they design that way? Well, I could just rip this little gray piece off and put it over my hands like mittens if I get cold.
No, what I started thinking was, what would Blaine say? What Blaine would say is, hi guys, this is another one I enjoyed today, but enjoyed more the first time. Those of who have watched more of the series know this isn't the last surprise left by the Cardassians, so I'm now more tired of the plot device than I was when it first aired. Still, for all of its faults, and its lack of any real tension, i.e. I might believe they may kill off an individual character in a particular episode, but blow up the station? No sooner than the series finale, at least. It does have great exchanges between Odo and Quark, as well as between Garak and Dukat. Worth watching for the dialogue, but otherwise largely unmemorable. And I agree to a degree. I agree to a degree. it doesn't have a lot in the way of greater messages. It doesn't have a lot in the way of how it's going to influence the series going forward, but it does have a lot of kind of cool character moments. It does have kind of some fun, you know, fun, oops, now what are we going to do moments. And I think it was just basically an enjoyable episode, but I agree. It's not, you know, it's not one, if you were watching the show and you just needed to watch the key moments to kind of get through the plot and how it progressed, this isn't one that necessarily would have had anything that you needed to see.
No, but it's a fun episode in and of itself.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. This passed the remote control test easily.
Yeah, easily. Yeah.
Because when I got through the first one last night, I was like, oh man, I hope this picks up, because I got through it and then, oh yeah, I was wide awake. I watched the whole thing. I was like, oh yeah, this is fun.
I was the same with you. I watched the first one. I was like, oh God, I really don't want to watch the second one. And then I watched the second one and 45 minutes just flew by.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Anybody have anything more on this one?
No, like you said, because it's just a really fun action episode, there's not really a lot of deep meaning to it, but the acting's uniformly brilliant. It's very fast-paced, it moves along at a fur clip, and it's very, very... It's riveting. It's really a really entertaining episode, largely because of Mark Alamo.
Yeah, I agree. I think, it had its fun moments. It was... As I watched it, again, I didn't really remember this one from the first viewing. And as I watched it, it kept me interested. I was curious to see how they were going to resolve it. I agree with Blaine. You never felt like any of the main cast was going to get killed off, and you never felt like the station was in any real lasting danger. But it had a lot of fun things in there, and you're trying to figure out, okay, how are they going to resolve this one? And hopefully it's not just the Deus Ex Machina at the end. And it was resolved kind of quickly, but it was more the journey to get there than it was the actual resolution.
Yeah.
And it was just fun to watch, and it kept me, kept my attention focused on the TV set throughout the episode. I never had to rewind to say, "Well, I wasn't paying attention. I missed that." So overall, just enjoyable, and I'm going to say a 3.5.
Yep. Oh, I didn't give it a rating, did I? Yeah, I'm going to go. I almost went 4 on this one just because of how much it was, how enjoyable it was. But I don't know how much of that was how enjoyable it was compared to the first one. Last week's episode. So I'm going to stick with 4. I'll go with my original release.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give this a 4, being bumped up for the Dukat Garrick factor, and the fact that they turned the space station at the end into one of those globes you used to be able to buy in Spencer's, to where it had the lightning bolts coming out, and you could put your hands on it, and it would follow your hands when you moved it around the globe. That was an 80s thing. I used to have one of those, along with a strobe light and a lava lamp. I was hip, man. Hip.
You were. You put it right next to the lava lamp.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So now, since I did the synopsis, you guys want to read some email?
Yeah. I'll do the first one then. Timothy Elliott's emailed in first about episode 33, which he's also called.
Wait, go on. Only Gene Hendricks writes in.
Oh, well, Gene's wrote in under Timothy's name. Which is quite clever of him, I thought.
Especially since the title of his email.
Who's been sleeping in my bed? I don't know that Gene's in Timothy's bed. that may be, let's not talk about that. Tim's email: greetings, my trio of learned gentlemen. Are you sure he's wrote to the right show?
Well, I'm catching up. Duo of learned gentlemen and Paul.
I'm catching up on Profits, and I've not written in a while. I would like to touch on your discussion of next-gen characters from your preamble. Counselor Troi never felt the next-gen writers knew what to do with. They tried to expand her character with the occasional love interest or the Troi falls victim to this week's Alien episode, but as Sean said, her job was to state the obvious. I never understood the need for a counselor to have a permanent place on the bridge. What does she do when they're travelling at warp and just cruising? Are the bridge crew so emotionally fragile they need a therapist standing by at all times? Watching the show, I felt she was a civilian assigned to a starship and not actually a Starfleet officer. But by Season 7, she was promoted to commander and could pilot the ship. Yeah, but she doesn't do a very good job of that if we remember Generations. She pilots the ship and crashes it. On to the episode. To quote Andy, Whispers was alright. Like Andy, I did like the way the episode was shot. By flipping it on its head and giving us the perspective of the quote, bad guy, the episode felt fresh. I liked the slow build and claustrophobic atmosphere of the show, but the Twilight Zone ending felt rushed. I don't think there is enough here for a two-parter unless they broader the scope and involve more sleeper agents. But what if they carried this story over 2 or 3 episodes? Have the DS9 crew slowly become suspicious and the story could run in the background over several episodes and then be resolved. On the whole, a good episode. Not great, but handled better than Conspiracy. Cheers, Tim in Texas.
Funny you mention that, because so later down the road there could be some type of sleeper agents in
there. Could, yeah.
Could be. Possibly, maybe. Who knows? You know who knows? Anybody who's watched all the shows.
Yeah. The Shadow knows.
The evil looks in the hearts of men.
Who's doing the next one then?
Oh, I was just going to make a comment on Troi. Are the bridge crew so emotionally fragile that they need a therapist standing in at all times? I think they would, if she was there all the time, they'd be, will you just go away? I don't want a telepath empath on the bridge, Are you okay? Are you feeling a little stressed? Get away from me! I'm stressed because you're here!
She's actually going to add to the stress.
Exactly. I think you would be more stressed by her being there. It's like, okay, don't be uptight. Don't be uptight. Are you a little uptight? Oh, my God. Will you just go away? So I guess I'll read the next one.
Okay. Have you calmed down enough to do so?
I guess. What? It's not that I hate Troi. It's just that, I don't. It's like having your wife around all the time. Are you okay? Like, I'm fine. Will you stop asking me? Why are you mad? I'm not mad. It's the face I make when I drive. It's my thinking face.
Yeah, well, why are you hitting yourself?
You look like you're upset. I'm upset now because you keep bugging me. Go to 10 forward and analyze people there, would you? I'm trying to fly the ship here, for God's sakes. I got things to do. I got deflector screens to turn on, asteroids to avoid.
I could see Picard getting really pissed at him. He takes a piece of chalk and makes a line. The line is drawn here. You cannot go past it.
Is this a first time emailer?
I think
Philip
it is.
Argent?
I think it's a new email, yeah. Yay! Yay for new emailers.
Do we have any music for new emailers?
Well, he should hold his head up. You don't get that.
Yes, I do. Argent. Hold your head up. Hold your head up. Hold your head up. Right? Right?
Yep.
Did I get it?
That's it.
Okay.
You got it.
Okay. Wait a minute. Didn't we have this Argent discussion?
It was on our X-Men score episode.
That's right. I was like, this word sounds familiar because I misused it in a sentence.
You meant to say ardent, and you said argent.
Well, gee, imagine that. I got the wrong word somewhere. It's my shtick now, right? Except it's not a shtick. Anyway, guys, that saves worrying about who gets the and or who goes first. It's just use guys. I am a middle-aged nerd. No, I'm reading as Philip here. I'm not reading as myself.
We know.
Okay. I'm a middle-aged nerd. See, that actually was me saying that, not his email. There's a bunch of us. We don't need to hide anymore. It's great, isn't it?
Pretty cool.
Yeah. There are different subspecies of nerd, though, and I am one of the obsessive ones. So when I like something, I tend to get very interested in it. I know a lot about DS9, or I thought that I did until I started listening to your show. I must have seen every single episode at least 4 times. And my favorites. God knows how many more. Sorry, I was trying to hold back a belch in the middle of that sentence, and it completely threw off the cadence of the sentence, and I apologize. And I've said too much, and as usual, I give too much information. DS9 is the first series I ever watched from beginning to end, although I have been introduced to the next gen by some video releases in the UK of the double-length TNG episodes prior to that. Sometimes I might know an answer to a trivia DS9 question that you pose to one another, but you guys consider things that never occurred to me, and it's like watching the shows all over again. I love the fact that you detest some of the episodes I have always thought pretty good because I'm now talking about them, because I'm now thinking about them from a different angle, and that is only ever a good thing. That being said, Duet remains one of my favorite pieces of TV drama ever, so we definitely share the same opinions sometimes. Very much looking forward to hearing your thoughts on The Wire, which you guys just did, and in the Pale Moonlight, although that second one is a ways off. The other kind of nerd I am is a quiet one. I don't generally rate podcasts or write in. I take them for granted, like a lot of other folks, I suspect. Mr. Sean Angle changed that. I have literally about 12 hours ago listened to your tribute to Sean, and I'm totally gutted by his loss, which is odd, of course. I never met him and heard him for the first time only a few weeks ago. It has brought me to see how much more intimate a podcast is compared with most other forms of media. I can watch actors that have passed away without blinking an eye, but to know I am now listening to the very unique voice of a man that has sadly passed away seems so much more of a loss. I've enjoyed listening to the three of you laugh and throw banter at each other, and I can genuinely say I will miss him too, and I'm truly sorry for your loss, which is obviously greater than mine. I have now heard some of the cast subsequent to Sean's tribute, so I know at this stage that you are hoping to carry on. Can I say that I sincerely hope you can do so? Of course, none of us know what the future holds, so for now, regardless of where we manage to get to, all I want to say is thank you. thank you to all three of you. Phil Argent, well, thank you. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the sentiment. I agree. And I can say, and I don't like to keep repeating it only because I don't want it to become very maudlin or whatever, but there hasn't been a day that's gone by since Sean's passing where I haven't thought about him and haven't missed him. And I'm sure, you know, Bill and Andy agree and feel the same way. And, you know, it's hard going on without him. And I always, you know, we joke around, I give the what would Blaine say thing. I honestly think with each episode that we do, I wonder what Sean would say about this. I wonder what his take would be on it. And I try and factor that in a little bit to my thinking. I try to think about what he would say and what points he would make, and I try to put them into the show without necessarily attributing them to him. But as long as we do this, he will always be a part of it, and that's all I can say on that.
Yeah, because it's quite a shame that we both ran out of episodes on the same week.
Yeah, I know.
You released the last episode that he did with us on Deep Space Nine, and I released the last Firefly one that he did. And that was quite sad, I think. But, you know, he's still here. We keep saying that.
Yep. Anyway, do you want to do one more, or do you think we're good?
If you do one more, do Gene. Do you want me to do Gene's?
I could do it. I even though I read the synopsis, I can do it. I'm tough that way.
Okay.
The next one is from Gene, and it's called The Maquis Part 2. Wake me when it's over.
Wake me up when it's over.
It's really odd when the synopsis for an episode makes it sound more exciting than it actually is. Just like the last episode, Brooks and Alamo are great, and Quark trying to seduce a Vulcan is amusing. But overall, this episode was just boring. At the risk of repeating myself, these two episodes seem like a season-long subplot that were crammed into an A-plot of two episodes. It just didn't work for me. As Paul said, the attempt to seduce Sisko over to the Maquis side is just too heavy-handed. When you compare it to the torture that Sisko went through in Paradise and didn't crack, this is really ineffective. Well, the Alec Guinness treatment didn't work. Let's just try talking to get him to turn. Sorry, but I don't think that someone who knows Sisko like Hudson is supposed to... But I think someone who knows Sisko like Hudson is supposed to would know better than that. Gene. And he did mention that that's from the bridge over River Kwai, which I believe we mentioned in the episode, and Gene mentioned in a prior email as well. It's that whole thing just seemed so contrived. It really, you know, nobody who was... The whole friendship seemed contrived, in fact. And you know, we went over it, and part of that is the writing, and part of it is the acting. I think they went hand in hand in that one, and being weak and not really providing us with anything to make it a believable relationship and make it in any way charismatic or compelling. So that episode failed on several levels. And I have agreement from the silence.
I agree entirely with you.
So that'll be it for this week's episode of Listen to the Prophets. Be back in 2 weeks for another exciting episode. When, Andy?
Next time, Meridian. I don't remember anything about this one, so I can't even come up with a pithy line.
Meridian, wasn't that the place where all the monsters lived in Nightbreed?
Probably, yeah.
I think it was Meridian. Yeah.
Oh, this isn't looking good. I'm just flicking through the companion, and the thing opens, the preamble after the episode synopsis opens with, "I don't think anyone likes this show," says Ron Moore. Excellent, good. Well, that'll be one to look forward to.
Well. Sometimes the episodes that we like the least make the best shows.
Yeah, okay.
So we will see. But in the meantime, we'll see you all in 2 weeks, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Yes. I've been eating a lot of ice, and I ate too much ice, and it numbed my mouth. That's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. I'm sorry. I will not chew ice before I do my book anymore, because it just is terrible.